the Bible is inspired by God. Praise the Lord, because then I find out that means that I get to go to heaven, and it means that when I defend biblical doctrine, I'm defending the truth against untruth or a lie. So that's what we're doing here. Here's our outline. We're not going linearly through this outline. We did the existence of God. We did the Jesus thing. We did the contradiction thing. Ladies, you weren't there. It's on my website, the outline, the PowerPoint, the recording. Please listen. It was great stuff. Probably, I guess. I don't know. Honestly, I think tonight's lesson is maybe more important than that one. We did history, archaeology, and the Bible. And after Jen and I come back from England, we're going to do a couple more lessons in this series, just so you know. All right. And then we talked about things which can be used to create faith in unbelievers. And then evidences which are merely more designed to defend those who already believe in God against the attacks of the opponents. Tonight's lesson falls into that category. So when you show somebody a copy of the Ryland Papyrus, they're not going to say, Jesus is Lord, okay? So this is evidence to defend our faith against the attacks of unbelievers. And believe me, they're out there. One way to avoid that is to never go online. That's one way. That might actually be a good idea. All right, but trust me, if you're out there just on campus, people say all kinds of stuff about the Bible, all right, and the fact that you cannot believe it, you can't rely on it, etc. Okay, so that's our topic tonight, the reliability of the Bible. How can I trust the Bible to be from God? There's really two somewhat separate questions here. One is the question of the inspiration and inerrancy of the Bible. It's the original things that were written. That's actually a separate question. The question we're going to address tonight is, how do we know that what we have is what was written? Because if the Bible initially was inspired by God, and we have highly corrupted versions of that, that would be a problem. And believe me, people will tell you that Muslims are very, very devoted to trying to prove the Bible is corrupted. They got a major problem. It ain't true, but that's beside the point. We're going to talk about that tonight, okay? So, we're going to talk about first the New Testament, and then we'll talk about the Old Testament. By the way, see that Chester Beatty Papyrus? We're going to see that. Jan and I, we're going to go to the Chester Beatty Museum. She doesn't know that yet, but I'm planning on it. We're going to go to the Chester Beatty Museum, which is in Dublin. It's in Dublin, and we're going to go there. And the Chester Beatty Museum has more 2nd, 3rd, and 4th century manuscripts than any other collection in the world. There are rooms full of this thing. This one is chosen almost at random, although it is one of the oldest Chester Beatty Museum papyri. By the way, the earliest biblical manuscripts are all papyri. In others, they're made out of papyrus. The most important biblical manuscripts are in vellum. Vellum is a cured leather made generally from lambskin. And vellum was not used extensively in the 1st and 2nd century. Vellum came into use in the 4th century primarily. So unfortunately, all the manuscripts we have from the 2nd and 3rd century are on papyrus. And papyrus just doesn't last very well. In fact, it's amazing that what we do have. So here are a couple of fairly important manuscripts. The oldest actual manuscript of Philemon from 300 AD. And here is a section of 2 Corinthians 11. It's been dated to 175 AD. Those are both papyri. All right, so people say a lot of stuff about the Bible. And they pass this off as if everybody knows this. And unfortunately, Muslims pick up on this, this crap. It's very poor quality stuff. We'll see why. I'm not just blowing off hot air. I'm telling you, these people are flat out wrong. They are plain wrong. Muslims pick up on it. You think they would notice listening to a bunch of atheists who hate God would not be a very good source of truth. But they don't have a whole lot of carefulness about this stuff. Anyway, so people have said for a long time the Gospels weren't written until the 2nd century, and they're mere fabrications, stories made up. In order to support some sort of movement that already existed. you've heard this, you maybe heard this, there are dozens of different gospels that were written, and there was this battle, and so a certain theological perspective won, and that produced the four gospels we have, but really there were dozens which are massively in contradiction with each other. You hear this stuff. There was no consensus about which of these four gospels is the most reliable picture of Jesus. And then the story goes, in the fourth century, Constantine called together an assembly of the church, and they said, all right, fine, this is going to be the Bible. By the way, that is garbage. But I'm telling you, this is put out there as if it's fact. There's a movie called The Da Vinci Code. You got to be over 25. Yeah, all right. Yeah, oh, you're under 25, and you remember that one. Okay, great. Dan Brown. It was a great movie. It was a really good movie. It was awesome. All right. So this is one of the quotes, and you read the book. All right. Constantine turned Jesus into a deity. I'm telling you, a lot of people believe this. A lot of people believe this. The idea that Jesus is God, that was not in the Bible. All right, was not believed by the early church. By the way, none of this is true. Just, you know, what you're reading there is just, you know, it's not true. And don't take notes right now. All right. Constantine turned Jesus into a deity. It was all about power. The early church stole Jesus from his original followers and used the church to expand their own power. Oh, this is typical stuff. More than 80 gospels. This is a quote from the book The Da Vinci Code. More than 80 gospels are considered for the New Testament, and yet only a relatively few were chosen for inclusion. Why? This isn't just bad scholarship. I mean, this is a lie. And the guy who wrote it, he has to know. He can't possibly not know it's a lie. Yes?
The book is fictional, though, right?
Yes.
Right, but you saw the movie, all right? Did you read the book?
Yeah.
If you read the book, he's definitely trying to create the impression that what he's telling you is true. I mean, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, generally when you have a book of fiction, they don't write at the beginning, this is a book of fiction. But in Da Vinci Code, he said, this is a book of fiction, and then he proceeded to pretend it wasn't. I'm just read the book. The movie is not quite so intense as in attacking Christianity, but the book is a flat-out attack on the Bible. And he presents it as if this is stuff that everybody knows, all right? So anyway, there is a vellum codex. A codex is another word for a book. The book, the thing that we call a book, was invented in the 3rd century. There were no books. There were literally no books before the 3rd century. So before that, they had scrolls. All right, and so the earliest manuscripts are all papyri, and they were just pages, essentially. They didn't have books, okay? Not that it really matters, but it's kind of cool stuff. All right. Here's the oldest manuscript. It's in the Rylands Museum. When I went into this museum, it's Manchester. I was like, oh man, this is so. I can't believe I'm here. It's kind of like, you know, I was here with Madonna. You know, so I was in the same room with Madonna. Well, I was in the same room with the Rylands Papyrus.
Wow.
I mean, that's way more exciting than being in the same room with Madonna. Hello, she's just some girl, you know, whatever. All right, folks, 125 A.D. Now, remember, you know, these Gospels were written well into the 2nd century and blah, blah, blah. This is from John. And by the way, see, it says John 18, 31 through 33 and then 37. It's because it's got 31 through 33 on the front, 37 on the back. Okay, that's the idea. 125 A.D.
That's in Greek?
Yeah, all these are Greek. I'll talk about other languages we'll talk about that. The evidence supporting the New Testament definitely includes non-Greek evidence. In fact, non-Greek evidence is very important in supporting the New Testament, although it's not the principal support, and I'll show you why. So here's a not very good manuscript. It's in the Sackler Library at Oxford there. Go to Oxford. Oxford, I believe, there's two different libraries there that both of which have awesome, amazing manuscripts. This is from John 18, 36 through 19, verse 1, from 150 AD. The Magdalene manuscript is also at Oxford, Matthew from 175. The fact is, these manuscripts from the second century are quite fragmentary. All right. When you get into the third century, you start getting whole pages and pages. Although you saw the Chester Beatty one from 175 AD. Okay, got it. There's that one, Second Corinthians, a whole section there. All right. Now, we have and many, many others. Not hundreds, many, many dozens of others from the second and third century. But then when we get to the fourth century, we have entire New Testaments. These are on vellum. And vellum lasts, under reasonably dry conditions for a very long time. So we have entire New Testaments. Codex Sinaiticus, because it was found in St. Catherine's Monastery on Mount Sinai. Codex Vaticanus, because it's been in the Vatican for many, many hundreds of years. Codex Alexandrinus, in a library in Alexandria, although it's not anymore. It's now in the British Museum. Codex Bezae. So we have entire Greek New Testament. By the way, Sinaiticus, Vaticanus, and Alexandrinus are the entire New and Old Testament in Greek from the mid-4th century. Okay? Got it? There's a picture of Codex Sinaiticus from the British Museum. I was in there, I took a picture, and the guard said, "Hey, what are you doing? You can take pictures." Sorry.
Oh.
But I kept my...
Is that like your picture?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Bezae.
It's contraband.
All right, now, let's talk about the evidence supporting the reliability of the New Testament. You know, when you read these people criticizing the New Testament, how do you know that Paul wrote it? And, you know, what about, how do you know Matthew and all this sort of stuff? They act as if the evidence supporting the New Testament is really weak compared to almost anything else you'd have any information about. That is so opposite of the truth. It's ridiculously opposite to the truth. All right, nobody questions Omnia Gallia est divisa in tres partes, Julius Caesar's writings. All right. And yet, did you know that the oldest manuscript of Julius Caesar's writings we have, in Latin, of course, is 950 years after Julius Caesar wrote it? That's a long time. Is it possible that some copying might have produced some errors over this? It's possible. And we have a total of 10 ancient Latin manuscripts of Julius Caesar's writing. 10. What about Herodotus? Herodotus, the most important ancient historian, Greek historian from the 4th century BC. We have a total of only 8 manuscripts. We have no complete Herodotus, only partial manuscripts. 8 total. The oldest one is 1,350 years after the original writing of Herodotus. And yet nobody questions that when you read a translation of Herodotus in English, whether it's the thing that Herodotus wrote. Nobody questions it at all, ever. Okay, and we could go down the list, Thucydides, the other most important Greek historian. And, in fact, the only ancient document for which you have even a decent number of manuscripts, of course, is Homer. And then we come to, see that Old Testament, those are Hebrew, ancient Hebrew manuscripts. I want to talk about the New Testament. The New Testament, we have over 8,000 Greek manuscripts. That number can be a bit deceiving because a majority of those manuscripts are from after 900 AD. All right, so give me the honest truth. However, dozens of them are from the second and third century. Hundreds of them are from the first 5 centuries. Okay, and so, the gap between the initial writing and the oldest manuscript we have is 50 years. Right? 50 years. The gap between Herodotus writing it and their oldest manuscript, 1,350 years. Do you think possibly, maybe some copying errors may have come in at that time? Okay, but the gap we have between the oldest New Testament manuscript and the time it was written is actually probably less than 50 years. The Gospel of John was written somewhere in the late 70s or into the 80s AD, so less than 50 years. Yeah?
I guess the question is there an explanation for why they're late, I guess? Or
why does it come after when the events occur? Because the New Testament, the churches maintain these manuscripts. And there were just more copies than of any other ancient book, just like there are today. I mean, if today everybody stopped publishing books and you come back 1,000 years later, there'd be a lot of Bibles around. All right? That's a good question. Most that was written in ancient times is completely lost. Almost everything that was written in ancient times is lost, completely lost. The amount of things we don't know is massive. But there's one set of events about which we know a lot. And that is the biblical things. Okay? And see, that people say you can't trust the biblical texts. Do they notice this information? All right. And then we have other information. For example, the New Testament was translated into the Coptic language in the second century. That would be the Egyptian language at the time. All right. Now, we don't have manuscripts of the Coptic Bible from that old, but the point is that the Coptic manuscripts we have, they're like a snapshot. All right. That translation was made in the second century. So they're a snapshot of the New Testament from the second century. Got it? And same with the old Syriac. The New Testament was translated into the Syriac language, which was the language of the Church of the East in the second century. The very first Latin translations were made in the second century. we have very few manuscripts of those. The Vulgate, which was the accepted Latin translation made in 340 AD, kind of subsumed all the other Latin translations. So these are snapshots which give us useful information. Other information supporting the reliability of our text are the quotes from it. Okay? Ignatius, writing in 115 AD, quotes from Matthew, John, Luke, those are he quotes from three of the four Gospels, plus several other books that I don't have in my list there. Polycarp, writing in 120 AD, quotes from Matthew, Mark, Luke, Acts, 1st, 2nd, Corinthians, etc. So what we have then is a snapshot of those books, from the first century. Alright? And, et cetera. Clement of Rome, this is writing in 95 AD, folks. First century. He quotes from 10 of the 27 New Testament books. Alright, so, that tells me that I think they were probably written during the first century. What do you think? Because they're already being quoted as authoritative scripture by a church writer. Somewhere between 95 and 97 AD is roughly when Clement wrote his book. In fact, here's the thing. Nearly the entire New Testament can be reconstructed from quotes from it in the second and third centuries. And I said that for several years. I was embarrassed that I never actually looked it up, so I kind of looked it up. And somebody did a careful statistical analysis, and something like 65% of the actual New Testament itself can be reassembled from quotes from it. Wow. From the second, third, and fourth century. And again, this proves two things. Number one, that these were considered canonical scripture at that time. And number two, it supports the accuracy, the reliability of the text that we have. Okay? And by the way, I'm going to mention later these other, you know, those other books, you know, those other books, supposed, none of them are ever quoted from, ever. With a couple of exceptions, Irenaeus, in his book Against Heresies, occasionally does quote some of those other books, only to say that they're not inspired. Yes.
Can you explain what Gnostic means for all
of
us at home?
Well, you're not at home, but for those who are at home. All right. So there were. I'm going to talk about that later. So remember the quote. There's at least 80 Gospels. First of all, it's not 80. That's a gross. He's counting all things were written by the Gnostics. I'll explain that a bit. As far as Gnostic Gospels, whatever that would even mean. There's maybe half a dozen, but whatever. The bottom line is, none of these guys ever quote, even one time, from any of these others. The only thing they ever quote from is the New Testament, establishing the canonicity in the second century. of these books. People will tell you the canon of the New Testament was selected in the 4th century. That is not true. Period. All right? The Muslims say the Bible's corrupt. They'll give you facts. They'll say there are over 100,000 errors in the New Testament manuscripts. By the way, that is not a lie. That is actually true. Now, divide 100,000 by 8,000. That's 12. So that's 12 mistakes per, you know, oh, okay. How many mistakes are there in the manuscripts of Julius Caesar? Probably not very many. Because we only have, whatever, 10 differences. Okay? Almost, and I'm going to talk about some of these textual variants. I want to be real about them, not pretend they don't exist. But nearly all of them are minor things, like a copying error, like somebody skipped a word, or somebody made a misspelling, or sometimes they transpose words, or sometimes they repeat a line, or sometimes they skip a line. These things are easily discovered. All right, because when you're reading it, first of all the other manuscripts don't have it. Second of all, it's sort of obvious, you know, misspelling. Yeah. Remember, American versus a Mexican? So, of these 100,000, we're down to maybe 50 or so of those 100,000, which might possibly have at least some impact on the actual perfect, 100% precise New Testament, okay? So, people throw those numbers out just to scare you. All right, there's a very short list of important texts where there are significant variants. John 5:3-4, 1 John 5:7-8, Mark 16:9-20. John, I may mention those briefly if you have time. All right, and in fact, a good summary, and I'll get back to this. The New Testament we have is 99.5% precise. Some people say 99.9%. Others will say 99%. 99.5 is a conservative, cautious estimate. In other words, one word in 200, there might possibly be some doubt. And I'll give you some of those examples. And these doubts involve things that make no difference whatsoever. None. I'll give you some examples. Okay? What about those thousands of errors? Remember, there's 8,000 manuscripts. Most of them are extremely small things which are fixable because we have 8,000 manuscripts. Now, of those 8,000 manuscripts, they're not equal. Honestly, there's only several dozen manuscripts that actually matter in trying to reproduce. Sinaiticus, Vaticanus, Bezae, you know, these ones from the 2nd, 3rd, 4th century, maybe as late as the 5th century. Anything after that is not particularly important. If I go back to those, see those four that I mentioned there, John 5, those only manuscripts after the 9th century even have those things in there. So, were they in the original? No. Only manuscripts after the 19th century even have those things. So were they in the original?
No.
Definitely not. There's no question about it. All right? Good. Good. Let me give you some examples. A textual variant. It turns out there are two possible textual versions of Mark 9:29. One of them says, he replied, this kind can only come out by prayer. A variant has, this kind can only come out by prayer and fasting. I'm telling you, because of the science of textual criticism, I haven't studied this one carefully enough, but probably we can say which is the correct one to about a 99% certainty. But that is amongst that 0.5%. Does that matter? It does not matter in the least. No, it doesn't matter in the least. Because we know prayer and fasting. I mean, the Bible talks about prayer and fasting as a combination in several places. That literally makes no difference, and I'm telling you, with the science of textual criticism, we can decide which is almost certainly the correct one anyway. Okay, another one is Luke 7:35, where it says, wisdom is proved right by all her children. And then Matthew is quoting Jesus in the same setting, And in Matthew 11:19, it says, wisdom is proved right by all her deeds. Actually, it's interesting, because almost all the manuscripts of Matthew 11:19 say wisdom is proved right by all her children. In fact, only a tiny percentage of those Matthew 11:19 say deeds. But the thing is, those tiny percentage include Codex Sinaiticus, Codex Alexandrinus. Okay, so this thing called textual criticism. And the scholars ask simple questions. Which is more likely, that Matthew 11:19 was changed to correct it and make it the same as Luke, or that somebody changed Matthew 19 to make it different from Luke? I'm going to answer the question. It's far more likely it was changed to make them to be the same. Because somebody was copying Matthew, and, you know, they forgot to look, and they've read Luke 100 times. The chances that they would change it in a way to make it different than what it originally was is extremely small. So, because the manuscripts that have deeds are the oldest, even though they're a smaller number by far, they're the oldest, and because of the sort of, by the way, go to my website, I did about a 1,000-word answer to this one here, or a 500 to 1,000-word answer, and I go into great detail. The bottom line is, does it matter? Because her children is a metaphor for her deeds. Which one did Jesus actually say? I don't know. By the way, let me tell you something. The New Testaments are not transcripts. All right? For example, if you're reading Jesus preaching a sermon, that is not a transcript. That is a faithful rendering of what they remembered. They didn't have recording machines. Okay? Yeah. So I hate to shock you with that fact. Besides, Jesus spoke in Aramaic. Yeah. So the Bibles we have are not word for word what Jesus actually said, but what they are is inspired. Amen. Which is all that matters. They're inspired.
Clapping up for inspiration.
All right. And then we have that inspired writing to at least a 99.5% precision. And of the 0.5%, almost all of it has absolutely no effect whatsoever. These are two examples. Got it? That's what we're talking about. So I'm going to move on. All right. Now let's talk. So that's talking about the reliability of the actual text. What about the content of the New Testament? How do we know the right books were chosen? Now, as a Christian, the way I know the right books were chosen is because of God, you know? Do you think, as a Christian, that God could have had some influence on what ended up in the New Testament, do you think? Well, for you and me, it's like, duh. But when you're talking to skeptics and unbelievers, you have to be prepared to defend the canon of the New Testament. The canon, which comes from the word cane, the measure. So what about those 27 books? When did the New Testament list of books become an accepted list of books? By the way, that's Ledovio Muratori, because he found this thing called the Muratorian Fragment, which is from roughly 175 BC, which is a list of the New Testament books. So let's talk about not the reliability of the manuscripts, but the reliability of the list of books. And there's a couple of lines for that, because one is you can look at the other books and compare. You look at Gospel of Thomas and those, we'll look at some of those. But you can look at the Didache, and I mentioned Letter of Clement to Rome. I've read all these letters. You read the Letter of Clement to Rome, you read the Epistle of Barnabas, you read the letters of Ignatius, you go, those are not inspired, you just read them. Alright, and they're all out there. There's all these writings of the early church fathers, you read them, you go, no, that's not Bible, this is pretty obvious. If you read the Old Testament Apocrypha, like Judith, or Tobit, or, Maccabees, you read those, you go, well, those are obviously not inspired. Anyway, so, here we go. A collection of Paul's letters, perhaps not including all 13 of them, was already being circulated 90 AD. In other words, by 90 AD, not only were Paul's letters being used as scripture, they were being circulated as a group by the 90s. Probably earlier, but I want to say what I know for sure to be true. Because they were being quoted in that way. Also, all four Gospels, I don't care what anybody says, they're wrong. It's not true. All four Gospels were written and were being circulated as the four together. Sometime in the 90s, probably by, almost certainly by 100 AD, possibly even by 90 AD. Marcion, who was a heretic, he gave an alternative canon in 140 AD, which is not exactly the same as ours, all right, but he was a heretic. So here are the facts. In the year 100 AD, the canon, the 27 books, was not definitely set yet. There were still some discussions. For example, some thought 2 Peter was definitely belonged in the New Testament. Some weren't so sure about that yet. Hebrews, Revelation, 2 and 3 John, and 2 Peter. Those, there was some debate in the first half of the 2nd century whether they absolutely, certainly would be part of the New Testament canon. Because who created the New Testament canon? The church did. The church universal. Not the church in Rome, not the church in Antioch, not the church in Alexandria. The church did. Now, I would argue God did with the Holy Spirit, but from the point of view of evidential information, the church did. And the church did not choose the canon definitely set in AD. That is not the case. Roughly by about 150 AD, the 27 books that we read today were all accepted as canonical. However, for the next 30 years or so, there was some minor debate. In other words, everybody had the same list of 27 at that point. Some people still kind of, you know, well, what about 2 Peter? What about Hebrews? What about Revelation? Okay? That's the correct information. Okay? Justin Martyr, 150 AD, mentioned the four Gospels. Irenaeus, 190. Called them the four pillars of the gospel. There were always four. There were never five. There was never three. There was always four from the very beginning. End of story. Who says differently is either lying or doesn't know what they're talking about. Those are your two choices. All right. Martyrian fragment. By AD 200, the New Testament, as we know it, was absolutely and completely set and accepted by all the churches without any debate at all. Okay? Origen, he mentioned people were still debating a couple of those, but everybody had the same list. There were some other books that were also passed around, Shepherd of Hermas, Epistle of Barnabas, Didache, and people said those are also profitable to be read in the churches, but you could read my book From Shadow to Reality. It's profitable to be read in the churches, you know what I'm saying? All right, what about those other Gospels? So this is what you're asking. There were several Gnostic Gospels, such as the Gospel of Philip, Gospel of Thomas. These were written mostly in the 2nd century, some in the 3rd century. There was this sort of group that was actually contained. There were Gnostics within the church. They were kind of accepting Gnosticism was a Greek philosophy of religion, and they denied that Jesus had a physical body. They said the physical things were not, the God of the Old Testament is a bad God. They're all this wacko stuff. Yeah. And you can read their writings, but here's the interesting thing. Even the leaders in these Gnostic groups, even they didn't say these are canonical. None of them did. Even the Gnostics never claimed the Gospel of Thomas belonged in the canon because they would have been laughed out of the church. So there were all these other Gospels. Garbage. Lie. I mean, these things were written by unbelievers. There were also things written by believers. But none of them were ever accepted by anybody as a canonical. That is the fact. And there is no evidence to the contrary. There is none. It's like people just talking out there. Oh, never mind. All right. These Gnostic writings, some of them were sort of pseudo-gospels, not really sort of, but I can't get into it. And other writings as well, Gnostic writings. They're written between mid-second and mid-third century. By then, the Gnostic movement pretty much died down anyway. Like I said, even Gnostics such as Marcion didn't include them. Here's a couple of quotes in the Gospel, in quotes, Gospel of Thomas. Let Mary go away from us because women are not worthy of life.
Ouch.
That's in the Gospel of Thomas. It's right there. Then Jesus allegedly tells Peter, he will make Mary male so she may enter the kingdom of heaven. That's in the Gospel of Thomas.
Wow, my gosh.
All right, it has childhood miracles, Jesus turning clay pigeons into actual pigeons. And, here's a quote from the Gospel of Philip. Just look at this quote. Echamoth is one thing and Etchmoth another. Echamoth is wisdom simply, but Etchmoth is the wisdom of death, which is one of who knows death, which is called the... This is in the Gospel of Philip that supposedly was in competition with the four Gospels.
Wow.
Jan.
Well, you know, Thomas was an apostle. So
right, but he didn't write the Gospel of Thomas.
Okay,
no.
Yes.
No.
So did our apostles write these?
No, and nobody in the second century believed he wrote it. Nobody believed it. There's the Gospel of Judas.
Then he was dead.
Yeah, and you know, they called it the Gospel of Judas. In the Gospel of Judas, Jesus says to Judas, thank you for getting me killed. You did me a favor because then I could leave this body that was never mine in the first place. That's Gnosticism. Okay? So, summary. The New Testament canon was selected by consensus of the church in the second century as those books which had apostolic... That was the thing. The apostles themselves said, this is inspired. That's what decided it. The evidence is conclusive that the Greek New Testament we have is virtually identical to the original writings of the inspired writings. Its accuracy is greater than 99.5%, and of that 0.5% or less, no important biblical teaching at all is at stake. Okay, what about the Old Testament? Uh-oh, 5 minutes. Here's a section of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Jen, I saw that awesome display. It was insane. It was awesome. All right, so before 1948, here was the situation. The situation with the Old Testament was definitely not the same as with the New Testament. The oldest manuscripts we had were of the Masoretic text, which was a very carefully arranged text by Jewish scholars. And the oldest one we had was the Cairo Codex from 895 AD. This is an entire Old Testament, by the way. The Aleppo Codex from 920. I'm sorry, the Cairo Codex is not the entire. The former and latter prophets. Aleppo Codex from what? 25 years later. The entire Old Testament. This is in Hebrew. Of course, we have Old Testament, Greek Old Testament from the 4th century, right? These are Hebrew. And the reason we don't have Hebrew Old Testaments from back then is the Jews had a law. When the manuscript became too old, they burned it. They didn't bury it. They didn't throw it away. They always burned it. All right? And so that's the reason that we don't have ancient Hebrew manuscripts, or we didn't. So there's a problem, because remember the time between Herodotus writing and the oldest manuscript, around 1,350 years? Well, that would be roughly the same. The gap between the writing of the Old Testament and the Aleppo Codex is around 1,350 years. Could a significant amount of copying error happen over that time? The answer is absolutely it could. Okay? So that would cast some doubt compared to the New Testament, some doubt on the reliability of the Old Testament. There's the Cairo Codex. Of course, it's on vellum. Okay. Then we have these Masoretes and these Talmudists. And these guys, they were, think of the most perfectionist person you'd ever met, give them perfection steroids, and make them crazy, and that's how careful these people were about copying. The Talmudist said, a synagogue roll must be written on the skins of clean animals prepared for particular use by the synagogue by a Jew. It must be fastened together with strings taken from clean animals. Every skin must contain a certain number of columns, equal throughout the entire codex. The length of each column must not exceed over less than 48 or more than 60 lines. The breadth must consist of 30 letters. The whole copy must be first lined. And if three words be written in it without a line, it is worthless. The ink should be black, neither red, green, nor any other color. It be prepared according to a definite recipe. An authentic copy must be exemplar, from which the transcriber ought not in the least to deviate. No word or letter, not even a yod must be written from memory. In other words, every single letter you have to look. All right, the scribe, not having looked at the codex before him, between each consonant, the space of a hair or thread must intervene, between every word, the breadth of it, blah, 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 blah. The fifth book of Moses must terminate exactly with a line, but the rest may not do so. Besides this, the copyist must sit in full Jewish dress, wash his whole body, not begin to write the name of God without a pen newly dipped in ink, and should a king address him while writing the name, he must take no notice of him, the role, etc., etc. And then the rules for the Masoretes were even crazier. These people knew the middle word of the entire Old Testament, the middle letter. They knew how many times every letter appeared. I mean, and if there was a single mistake, burn it. So that explains the Dead Sea Scrolls. Because 1948, the famous story of the Bedouin boy throwing a rock into a cave and it shattered instead of hitting. Oh, there must be some. Went down there. This is one of the earliest clay jars containing them, and they're sold in a marketplace there and somewhere in Palestine. Here's cave number 4, where the largest number were found. Yes?
Wait, they just sold it. Did they know it was in there?
Right. They knew it was like manuscripts, but, you know, they didn't realize these were, Jewish manuscripts. Yeah, right. Okay. In Qumran, which is east of west of the Dead Sea in the very, very, very desiccated dry mountains there. Jen and I went to, what's the city? Qumran, where these probably were made. Here's the Isaiah scroll. There were 3 Isaiah scrolls, 3 nearly complete. 1 complete, 2 nearly complete. All right, here's the thing. Look at that picture. See, the Dead Sea scrolls include manuscripts from about 250 BC to as late as 50 AD. I've represented it as 150 BC. So here is Masoretic text, original writing, and the Dead Sea Scrolls covered about 80% of that gap. And when you compared the Masoretic Isaiah to the Dead Sea Scroll Isaiah, the changes were absolutely minor. Okay, something like 13 words and something like that. So, there you go. So we have the Masoretic text, which is this awesome, and by the way, in creating Old Testaments from the Hebrew, the Masoretic, even though it's the later text, those were so carefully put together by these awesome Jewish scholars, that's considered the sort of the standard text. But then they compare that to the Dead Sea Scrolls. We have entire books of the Old Testament. We have at least one manuscript of all the Old Testament except Esther. And then, of course, there's the Septuagint, a translation made in 200 BC into Greek. And it's a snapshot of the Old Testament in 200 BC. Further evidence. And then there's the Samaritan Pentateuch, a translation made in 400 BC. Within 100 years of when much of the Old Testament was even written, although that's just the Pentateuch. Okay, there are more. I'm not going to say 99.5% for the Old Testament. I'm not going to give you a percentage, all right? But it's not 99.5 plus. It's, and again, there's a lot of possibility of copying. I mentioned numbers. Look at the Hebrew letter Kalef and the letter Resh. Those are pretty close, especially if you write in ink or something like that. And their numbers used not Roman numerals, used Hebrew numerals. And 2 of the numbers, I don't know if 7 and 3, I don't know what, were those 2. So you can see how. So, you know, don't take as gospel that it says there are 700 soldiers. It could be 7,000, or it could be 600, or it could be 770, okay? So the precision of the Old Testament text, I don't know, maybe 98%. I don't know. I shouldn't say anything because I don't actually know. I've never really done careful research there. Okay? But we also have Targums, which were basically commentaries in the Old Testament written in the first century, sometimes BC, the Talmud, the Mishnah. Josephus said there are not 110,000 books, but 22 books. There's 22 books in the Old Testament. Wait a minute, 22 books? I start at 39. His 22 books are our 39. For example, the 12, the minor prophets, those are just 1. 1 and 2 Chronicles, just 1. Ezra and Nehemiah, just 1. So his 22 books are the exact same. The exact same. This Josephus, first century. So the Old Testament canon was set and unchanged by the first century. Fact. And people say differently. They just don't know what they're talking about. They literally don't know what they're talking about. So when people say that, just go, blah, 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 blah. Don't literally do that, but. Okay, the whole Council of Jamnia thing, there's a whole thing about that. What was that exactly? Was that an actual thing? But anyway, the Jews met and basically they discussed the canon of the Old Testament, but they didn't change anything. They just confirmed what it already was. The main purpose of that Council of Jamnia was to get rid of what we call the Apocrypha. In other words, those extra books that some Christians use,
yeah.
The main purpose of that one was to say, no, those are not. That was the main thing they did, was to exclude things, not to include anything. Okay? All right, canon of the Old Testament was set by general consensus of the Jewish rabbis, probably as early as 300 BC. We can't give a solid date. We can say when the New Testament canon formed. It was formed by 150 AD. Some minor debate, which probably didn't change anything. We can't say the exact date when the Old Testament canon was formed. Probably by 300 BC, probably. Certainly by 200 BC, because it was all being translated into Greek and used already. All right. By the way, Josephus said it was set by Ezra, who was in the 5th century BC. All right. Then you can, I ran out of time, but you compare it to the Old Testament Apocrypha. Other Jewish extra-biblical writings, such as 1st Esdras and 1st Enoch, there's all stuff about that. All right, etc. But I ran out of time. That's it. All right, so we're not going to do a discussion group. We could just, I don't know what there is to discuss. Oh, I'll take maybe one or two questions, if there are any. The question is, may Michael leave without being impolite? Yes, he may. Yes.
In the Quran, doesn't it talk about Jesus when he's making a bird from clay or something like that?
Right, which is evidence for the corruption, not of the New Testament, but of the Quran.
But do they get that from?
Yes. So, if you're going to leave, that's okay. But let's keep it quiet because I'm answering questions. If you leave, that's totally good. So the evidence is that Muhammad had some access to the Old Testament, as in the actual Old Testament, mainly through Jews. I don't know if he ever read it, but he had some fairly accurate information about the Old Testament, but his information about the New Testament was mainly from heretics or sort of weird groups that had these other things. And right, so yeah. So it seems like he had possibly no exposure to the New Testament. There were Christians living in the Arab Peninsula, especially in the southern part of the Arab Peninsula, what would be called Yemen today. There was a significant colony there. And so, again, this is evidence for the lack of inspiration of the Quran. It is not evidence against the Bible. Far from it. Far from it. Again, the Muslims have a big stake in this. They say the New Testament is corrupt. There's a reason for that, because in the Quran, the Bible is called the Injil. And he says, Muhammad said, these are the words of God written to his people. All right? So how do they explain the fact that the Quran says stuff that completely contradicts the Bible? So what they say is that our Bibles have been corrupted. They have a big problem with that. There's no evidence for it. And even if they could show more corruption than exists, would that be enough so that Jesus wasn't killed on a cross? I mean, come on, give me a break. Anyway. All right. I don't see a lot of appetite for questions because it's been a long time, so. All right. Next Wednesday, we're going to be meeting at the guy's house. We'll see you guys in two nights, free food and a lot of fun, but mainly about, thank you, Jen, mainly about honoring the graduates, right? Yeah. All right. Congratulations. No, did you find babysitting for your child or?
Yeah.
Good.
Ballin'.
It's, by the way, just, you know, it's not easy for Noe to be here on Wednesday night. It's not. It's a hassle. Forever.